Hello, Hazel. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Oh, no, thank you for inviting me. I'm very well, thank you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday indeed to you. Thanks for joining once again. I know we've been communicating back and forth a few times. Why don't we join it? Why don't we do it now? Then something pops up on my side, on your side. But I'm so happy that you are with us today. And before we start, I'm really excited what you want to share, because you're not just a knowledgeable local, you are a tour guide. And I'm super excited to hear what you're going to share with us. But why don't you tell us, of course, before that, something about you. Tell us a short story of yourself.
Yeah, so my full name's Hazel Baker, and I am a qualified London tour guide, but I think mainly it's just I fell in love with London. I've been here nearly 20 years. I think I should have a big party when I hit 20, since I didn't have a 20th birthday party myself. And I have lived in some amazing places. I first moved to Bermondsey before anybody really admitted to the fact. You know, now it's young and funky, so I think I set the standard there. And then I moved to living in Covent Garden, which was amazing, for over 5 years with four men. That's a different story. And then moved to Kensington and then up to West Hampstead. So I have pretty much done southeast, central, west and northwest. I have yet to conquer East London. But yeah, I do tours around where I live and also where I've had some fantastic contracting jobs. Because, of course, that's when you get to know the area more than anything else. When you get to feel the beat of a place, you know, you're not just visiting for a day. So that is something that I enjoy doing. And when you've got a love, I know you're the same, Pavel, is that you've got to share it, haven't you? You can't keep it inside.
Yeah, it's a crime if you don't share it in a way. So how this love for tour guiding and then, you know, getting to know more about the place came out?
Yeah, so I'm trained as a digital marketer, so I do a lot of contracting work for charities and governments, local and central. But you know, it's just there's still a little piece that's missing. I was going on all these tours thinking I can do a better job than that. So you know what, I went back to university, Westminster University. I got my shiny badge and I quit the day job. And I just went full for it. You know, you've got to put your money where your mouth is, haven't you? And that's what I did. So, yeah, I think it was more of, I thought, you know, I'll get the badge and then I'll just, in 20 years when I retire, I can then be a tour guide and I can say, well, you know, still Hazel's been a qualified tour guide for 20 years, you know, because that would have been actually accurate. But that's not been the case. I got the bug and that was it. I haven't been able to let it go.
Wow, 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 wow. Well, I consider myself as somebody who knows about London, you know, more than the average person for sure. But, you know, lifetime with so many ages, you know, people, cultures coming, leaving something behind, there's always, always, always something new to explore. So I'm really interested to hear what you have to share with us. We're going to be starting with Covent Garden. Is that true?
Yes, I think so, because hopefully if anybody has been to London, then they've been to Covent Garden. And it's such a wonderful, vibrant place. And you can eat yourself round the world, really, round Covent Garden. There's so many different places. And it's also constantly changing as well, especially the streets around it. We're not just talking about the piazza. It's the vibe of the area itself. And of course, it's very historic as well. So you are following in the footsteps of some really big names in London history.
Yeah, indeed. So as you said, is the plaza. Many people just go there, take a picture, stroll around the market, you know, sit down, enjoy the street performances, and most likely that's it, you know.
Yeah,
that's it. But how about we learn something more about the Covent Garden? Can you start, you know, slapping us with curiosities from the area?
Yeah, well, the name Covent Garden literally comes from a garden for the convent of Westminster Abbey. And maybe many people have been to Westminster Abbey as well, because these monks and also nurses lived, nuns lived in Westminster Abbey. They've got to eat, haven't they? So the around the area were gardens to feed them. And this area was part of the gardens that the nuns looked after. But with the dissolution of the monasteries, Henry VIII breaking away from the Roman Catholic Church, he commandeered all of this area. And in the 1800s, when a Roman Catholic church was built just off Maiden Lane, they found there a small piece of the pulpit from an old church, a chapel that was there pre-Tudor times. And so they've put that in their church as a reminder to the history of the area. And they didn't know it was there when they were building it. So that was a nice find, wasn't it?
Oh, look at that. So there were gardens before, but how that came to be a market? Or were they trading as well at the same time?
Yeah, so it was a market from the 1600s. It was the Duke of Bedford who was given the charter from the king, so for him to be able to put a market on. And it progressed from a little bit of livestock to fruit and vegetables, and then it went a little bit upmarket, really. So the building that you see nowadays, the stonework, this was built in the 1830s. So this is at the very end of the Georgian period. But the fantastic roof that you see, that is Victorian. That's from the 1870s. And it's really huge. When you stand in there and you can see the lamps, they you know, I think I could fit in one of them. And then on top of the lamps, there are pineapples. And pineapples were a really posh fruit. Most people, even in the 1870s, had never seen, let alone tasted, a pineapple before, which is really quite remarkable. So this is kind of showing the people that are walking around the area that are seeing these pineapples that this is not only a fruit and vegetables market, this is the Mark Spencer's market of Victorian London.
What a great analogy. Okay, that was fantastic. So here was the posh people coming here. So poor people basically will not be hanging around.
Well, the posh people came to spend money.
Yeah.
And then the poor people were either working in the market, either some sort of official job, including moving, carrying the fruit and vegetables around, or maybe you would be a flower seller if you're a young girl. So if you think of My Fair Lady, that's set all around Covent Garden. But also, if you maybe asked one of the ladies with the big hats and the fake flowers and she's spending all this money, well, she still needs to get it home and she wouldn't be carrying it herself, would she? Oh, no. So maybe you could offer your services and earn a little bit of money that way.
Okay, I understand. Entrepreneurial people all around. Okay.
That's right.
So when we go there, is there something else except browse around the market, you know, sit on the plaza, get the street performance? Is there something else that we can do in that place?
Yeah, so one thing that the Covent Garden market is very good at is that the surrounding area is lots of little eateries. And if you like tea, then there's Mariage Frere there. And it's a fantastic shop. And you go it through and you can choose all these hundreds of varieties of mainly loose teas. And that's really quite an exciting, you know, they stand there with the tea and with a fan and you get wafted the smell of all these wonderfully exotic teas. So there you go, how fantastic inside. And that's the shop area. But you can also go upstairs, which is where you get the fantastic view downstairs. And that's where they have their cafe stroke restaurant, and they do very simple things like a sandwich, but it literally will be the nicest sandwich you have ever tasted because it's all tea blended. So if you're having some sort of pork, then it'll be tea infused.
Wow.
Even like a tea mayonnaise in there. And you're like, yeah, I know. And
how do you even make tea mayonnaise?
I don't know. I mean, we'd have to YouTube it, won't we? We'll learn something there. So it's a really nice experience because, of course, you can have tea with your lunch or they do fantastic tea-related cocktails. Oh, yes.
I can see you speaking from experience over here.
Oh, yes. And if you need recommendations of what to have, then happy to help. But yes, it's and they have some really nice cakes as well. So, and because it's quite small, You don't get that hustle and bustle feel like you do in Covent Garden. It's a lovely little oasis. So you can do that. Or if you like sweet things like Ladderay, that's actually on the Piazza. And now they've extended their outdoor seating as well. So if we have one of the two sunny days of in London in a year, you can sit out and have something from their menu, and their macarons in particular, especially the vanilla one, is a really quite amazing. So you can sit and watch the performers and allow the life and the bustle of Covent Garden to go by, but you've actually got a seat, because there's not many places for you to sit down in Covent Garden. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah. It's just this market where you just walk around. My thing is that I don't like crowds. So I'm not a big fan of Covent Garden because it's so crowded. And the few times I go there, it's the times when I'm showing people around. And it's just nowhere to sit, you know. Really, yeah. You just walk around, you know, bang around people, and then you just need to go out. So what exactly is this this place that you said with the T's? Is it inside?
Ladderay.
No, the previous one.
Oh, it's on King Street. So King Street links Covent Garden Piazza to Garrick Street.
Okay.
So on the way to Leicester Square.
Okay. I have the map over here. So King Street is on the...
So next, yeah, so you can see Maxwell's there.
Yeah.
Just so you see St. Paul's Church. Move up St. Paul's Church north.
Yes.
Yeah, and basically where it says Aerobica, it's basically there. So somewhere on this little stretch in between these ones.
Okay, but is that inside or on the outer side?
It's all inside, all indoors. All
inside.
And it's beautiful. So yeah, if you zoom in a little bit more, the other company names will pop up.
Okay.
And so you're looking for Mariage Frere, which is it's not too far. There we go. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Mariage Frere. Yeah.
I saw it.
There you go. That's
temporarily
it.
Closed.
That's certainly one. Because, you know, tea is something that as Brits seems to have some sort of obsession with.
Yeah.
And it's nice for me, who thinks, you know, I know a lot about tea, to be confirmed that I don't. And there's a lot to learn. So you can come away after having to remortgage your house to buy all the teas that you like. But it's nice to have something that you can take home and enjoy rather than just sticking on your fridge, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Enough with magnets. My door cannot take it anymore. So how, if it's such a busy area, how is this place not so busy?
Well, if you're a morning person like I am, then this is the best time to explore. Yeah, so on a Sunday, shops don't normally open until 12 o'clock. So when I lived in Covent Garden and I wanted a pint of milk, that was a bit tricky because you feel like half your day is missed. You can't get your emergency breakfast because the shops aren't open. But in the early mornings, that's normally when I do my tours. The last time we do it is really 11 o'clock, because by 12:30, it's crammed. And then that means you can actually have space. Londoners, it's not just Londoners, it's people coming into London are coming from not only the hotels, but from other counties. So they're coming into London. So if you're there at 10, they're probably only getting their train, which is in another hour away, and then they've got to get to Covent Garden. So the mornings are far better for that.
Okay, great point. And usually it's always like that with places. It just varies how early you need to get to the place. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it does take on a different life of its own at the weekends, obviously. On Mondays, there's an antiques market. So you can enjoy that, but it's really sort of like at 4 p.m. And then in the evening, it's different again, because 7:30, everybody has whizzed through to go to the theatres. So after 7:30, you have another calm, really. So you get to experience it the day at the night, early in the morning or after 7:30 when everyone's in the theatre.
Great point. Great point. Okay. Is there any other gem that you have, like a coffee shop or a restaurant, like where we can eat in the area? What would you say?
Yeah, there's loads of places in Covent Garden, but one of the places that I go to for special occasions, so maybe this is something that you want to book and you would need to book several months in advance, but there is a reason why, Pavel, because it really is quite exquisite. Not only the food and the service, but the experience as well. So I already mentioned that outdoor eating in England isn't particularly out there because obviously our climate. But what if you could have a garden? And this is what Clos Major does. So it's only a couple of doors from Mariage Frères. So you can see which street I spend most of my time on. and it has a garden room at the back, which is it's basically a conservatory, but you can't see the conservatory elements. They always have some sort of enchanted oasis in there. And so this is very, very nice. There are only about 8 tables in here. So there are other areas of the restaurant, which are very nice. But if you want the super comfy chairs that don't squeak and you want the enchanted garden feel, then you need to book the central. And of course, you know, that's always going to be limited to the amount of people that are booking. So you need to book it in advance, and it's divine at Christmas. And we usually have our wedding anniversary there, which is in January, thankfully. So everyone's done their Christmas and it's before Valentine's. So we're usually rather lucky for January because everyone's spent their money. But it is very nice, and it's nice to have, their hot chocolates. Hot chocolates. This is one thing that they're missing. So they do a lunch menu and they do an evening menu, but they don't do afternoon tea. Now, I know they're French, but, you know, some people need to eat in the afternoon. But they do an amazing hot chocolate. And I think they're missing out with, you know, a hot chocolate and a nice slice of cake in the afternoon just to keep the extra, you know, people coming in and being able to experience it without having to pay the big bucks for dinner. And their hot chocolate, Pavel, they have a chocolate ball. And in there you can choose a number of different ingredients, but I chose hazelnuts, being hazel,
obviously, of course,
to keep it in theme. And then you pour your hot milk on top of that, and it all melts, and it's just sublime yumminess. So you have to remember when you go to save enough space for the hot chocolate at the end.
Okay, so it's a hot chocolate with actual chocolate.
Proper chocolate. I mean, who would have thought, eh?
Yeah, no, right? It's crazy. Okay, well, this place really looks amazing. So I think I have seen it, you know, vaguely. Uh-huh. But yeah. I know it was busy, but I didn't know you need to book months in advance.
Yes. If you don't have months, but you want an English experience, because obviously Clos Major is French, then Rules is a really good place to go. So that was established in 17... Rules, yes, RULES, okay. Like rules for living.
Mm-hmm.
And it has two entrances. My favourite one is on Maiden Lane. And it was established in 1798. And they claim it's the oldest restaurant in London. But, of course, you have to take these things with a pinch of salt. Mm. We had places to eat, we're just taverns. This was a dedicated restaurant. So, but as you can see how lovely it is, they have a doorman with a nice hat, you know, and also they're friendly to tour guides, which is always nice. It's not always the case, but they also used it in filming a number of films and TV series, including Downton Abbey.
Okay.
So it's one that people have probably seen, just hadn't realised that Rules was the venue. And then upstairs, there's still more dining. And if you like game, this is really where to go. That's where Charles Dickens had his favourite table upstairs on the first floor. So he could peer through the window and look at everybody on Maiden Lane and I assume judge them.
Okay, well, that is really, that's all in the area, right?
Yes, so it's on Maiden Lane, and you can do walk-ins if you're lucky, particularly for lunch in the week. But it is if you want a nice table, if it's a special occasion, why risk it?
Yeah, why risk it? Okay, that is amazing. And as I told you, I usually stay away from crowds, and I'm guilty of not knowing so much of Covent Garden. I mean, I knew it was converted and was gardens before, but places where to stay and go, that much I didn't know. So thanks for sharing. Are there any other place, like, this is crazy, like, they're so hidden. Are there any other places like that you would like to share?
If you've got a sweet tooth as well, then Santa Nata. They do those lovely little, they're like patio sonatas. Well, how do you pronounce that? They're glorious little pastries that melt in the mouth. Mm. So it's Santa Nata, and they're really big on Instagram. There you go. Mm. And they're very happy for you to go in and take some photos and that as well. Which is always nice when you're trying somewhere new. You want to know where you've been. You want a nice little photo to remind yourself of it. And these ones are just so light and so juicy and so sweet. And you think one's not going to be enough, but it's just the perfect amount. So these are little Portuguese delicacies. So as I said, you can eat your way around Covent Garden. You don't have to go very far at all.
Yeah, there's a place like that in they call Pastel de Natas. They're from Portugal, indeed.
There we go.
I watched a documentary that nobody actually knows how they exactly are made. So there is in Portugal, there is one place that they make them, and except that place, nobody actually knows what's in that secret sauce over there, that cream.
There you go. But it's addictive, isn't it?
It is,
and it's very distinctive. And the first time I ever tried them was actually at a club in Covent Garden. It was a Brazilian club. And they were selling them. And
in the
I was
club?
Just like, why would you?
In the evening?
In the club in the evening. And I was like, what's going on? And there was a huge queue. And I was just, I'm sorry, I'm not normally one to join in, but I had to join the queue and buy one just to see what it was. So, and of course, it stuck to my lipstick and all the rest of it. But it was an experience that I remembered.
Yeah. Was that, where was that? Is that in London somewhere here?
Yeah, it was in Covent Garden. It was just by, oh my goodness, I can't remember what it was called now, but it's just round the corner from where they played Warhorse and the just off Longacre. So you know where the headquarters to the Masons is?
Okay, I think I've been.
And you have to go down the stairs.
Okay. I'm not very good with clubs, but I think I've been to a Brazilian club, but they didn't, maybe not, because they didn't offer that in the evening. So maybe it's either different.
Oh, well,
different club
that's or... why you didn't go back. Yes, exactly. Yeah. You see?
If they have offer for sure, why not go back and get a dessert?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
And have you ever drank in a toilet, Pavel?
Well, what?
Or is that too personal a question?
No, but I'm curious to hear what you're going to say next.
Well, on Wellington Street, so if you come up Waterloo Bridge and you head straight into Covent Garden, that street is Wellington Street. And that is also where the Lyceum Theatre is, where Lion King is. And on that little section, just between, just as you come off Waterloo Bridge and before you get to the Lyceum Theatre, there is a what looks like an entrance to a public toilet. And it was because it was a public toilet, but now it's a very intimate, very cliche sort of hidden bar where you have cabarets and live blues music and burlesque shows. And it's called The Cellar Door.
The Cellar Door. Okay, so yes. How did you find about that?
Oh, well, I used to take burlesque classes when I was thinner and younger.
What and, happened? First of all, is that the place?
Oh, I know.
Is that the place?
There you go. Yes, yeah, so you can see the door on the right. A memoirs of a famous Metro girl. She's shown it. There you go. So down. No, if you come out again.
Okay.
But yes, I mean, you can see that. But if you see the entrance, because people won't know what they're looking for. So just down, third line down. There you go, on the right. It's a nothing entrance. That's it. A nothing entrance, is it? So behind that pink light is Waterloo Bridge.
Okay.
Yeah, so,
oh yeah.
And unless the light's on,
when
you
say public toilet, I imagine like an actual door that goes into the wall. But this actually is like you're going down in the underground, like under the ground.
Right.
You're going there. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. So it's very small. There's no crowds, Pavel. So this sounds perfect for you. With live music as well. I mean, it's all the live venues in London, you know, they're shrinking year on year. But this is a really good one for you to know. And at least it's not a private members club. There's one in Bermondsey that's similar, but it's private members. So not everyone can enjoy that one. But this one's open to the public.
Oh, so they're a chain as well. It's not just one.
Yeah. No.
So they find toilets that are not used anymore and they just convert them?
That's right, exactly.
So smart. So smart.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they do it out really. I mean, you just wouldn't guess what it used to be, would you? From the insides. It's just now they've added the lights and that it looks supposed to go down.
This is what I imagine. Is
another
that a,
one.
Is that a, this is what I imagine, a door in,
it's, that's
in the
a
wall.
Restaurant. Yeah, so, but that's not obviously the one we're talking about, but it's the same kind of theme. So in Chinatown, there is there's a bar where you have to have a password.
Oh.
And
what was the password?
In order to, I'm not telling you.
you can tell me later.
and then the doorman will let you in, or if you get the passport wrong, then he won't.
Okay.
And there's a piano that's actually built into the bar, and that's nice and small as well. So there's lots of hidden places. And then there are lovely other places if we move to sort of like more drinking. Obviously, Covent Garden's got loads of historic pubs, but one that's sort of raised up on the people's Instagram accounts now, you might know it, is Mr. Fogg's Tavern.
Okay.
So have you been there? So this one's on St. Martin's Lane. And what they've basically done is built a pub.
Is that
round
the
one? Mr. Fogg's. They're like round the world in 80 days. So Mr. Fogg's, F-O-G-G-X. G-G-X.
Okay.
That's me. But yes, so all of these are coming up now. Look how beautiful this is. So this is a Victorian pub, which they have then added the theme. So they're trying to flog their gym because obviously we're going through a bit of a renaissance at the moment. If you suffer from dust allergies, I advise not going in with the amount of stuff that you have in here that's just collecting dust. It's not dusty. It's just if you're more sensitive, then it's just something to bear in mind. And look at the door. Look how beautiful it is. At throughout the year, they actually change their decorations around the door and around the top because they want people to take photos, you know, and share it on Instagram. And then that makes more people want to come and try it. It's good business, isn't it? They're investing in their business. And they do gin tasting in there as well. So it looks great when it's empty, but I've never seen it empty like that. But that's another one. And they've opened a few now in London. But this one's still my favourite because it's got that sort of Sherlock Holmes-y-esque feel, you know. So that's certainly one that I would recommend. And, of course, this is all within Covent Garden, so can't complain about that. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You just have to time it right because obviously a lot of these places you're not, you can't book. But if you're not into the drinking the alcohol, then I would suggest moving up to Monmouth Street, which is not too far away from Mr. Fogg's Tavern, so just a little bit north.
Okay, and what's the name?
So it's called Monmouth Street. So M-O-N-M-O-U-T-H.
But what's the name of the place?
Monmouth.
Oh, that's
Monmouth. Yeah.
Oh, we're going to the street.
So this is Monmouth.
Okay.
Both. That's why it's nice and easy to remember. So this is Monmouth Coffee on Monmouth Street. And this is maybe my favourite London coffee. And they've been doing coffee from even before I was born. So they've been really old.
Come on.
This one is in... So the so the picture you can see, that one's in Borough Market, but they do have a few. But Monmouth on Monmouth Street kind of feels a little bit more special. Okay. And of course, it's smaller and you don't have the crowd. You have to kind of know that it's there. And they really focus on good quality coffee that's sort of like old fashionedy. It's kind of musty. It's and it's very easily drinkable. So of course you buy a coffee, you love it so much, and then you buy a bag of the beans to take home. But not too far from Monmouth Coffee on Monmouth Street, you have Hotel Chocolat Restaurant. This isn't a shop. This is where you can have, so if you ever saw the film Chocolat, you know, and they're eating all that delicious dinner with the chocolate sauces and everything on it, and you're like, how where well, this is where.
Is that the
there
one?
There you go, that's it. Chocolat. So of course they focus on like chocolate ice creams, but they also have a fantastic restaurant in there. And as you can see, Rabot 175, that is their restaurant in Borough Market as well. So you can try in different places.
Okay. Something I want to ask you, because when we were talking before that, you said that one of the places is claiming to be the oldest restaurant in London. You know, rules. You hear that a lot from places like, we're the oldest restaurant, we're the oldest pub.
But yes,
yeah,
yes.
You know, many places are claiming that. So I'm just curious, as a qualified guide, what is your opinion? Which is the oldest pub or restaurant, anything in that kind?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I've come to trust my gut and not trust the pub signs that you see.
Okay.
So, for example, there's the Anchor Pub on the South Bank. You might know it. And that's used in Mission Impossible film for the last scenes. And it's a lovely pub, but it says it was established in like 1688. You're like, well, look at the bricks for a start. We know that. Here we go. How lovely is that?
Oh, yeah, I know so, that one.
Yeah, just, you know
just,
that one?
Just on the river, yeah.
That's right. So there's a date where it says, I can't remember the date itself. And you're just like, that's so naughty, because the building that you can see with these bricks, they're not that old. It's just that a building was on that spot, which happened to be a pub, but it wasn't called the Anchor. So they've kind of extended the legacy. So that's like adding a skip full of salt, isn't it, to the title. So they're naughty. I mean, it's a nice pub and it's nice and big, and there's a secret room in there that no one knows about. So that's where you'd find me if I'm in that area. So because I don't like crowds either.
Is there a password for that room as well?
No, it's just like one of those doors, if you ever do the Crystal Maze, you know, and you're pushing doors to try and find which one opens, you know. So yeah, so that's a good one. But this is a perfect example of a date on the sign that isn't actually
false
true.
Advertisement.
So, yeah. So with the rules thing, it's because it's a restaurant, not a tavern, which is what most places would go and eat to, or a chop house. You might have heard, like Jane Austen, or indeed Scrooge for Dickens. He goes and eats his usual meal in his usual manner at the chop house, the local chop house, because people didn't have kitchens. But this time, Rules Restaurant is about going to specifically eat a meal without sharing tables and conversations with everybody else, which is what the old way of eating in a chop house was. So for them, I think that it's true. It's just you have to, what we consider a restaurant is very different from what a restaurant was when it was first established.
That's true. Okay, so in your opinion, Rules is the oldest restaurant in London. You would agree with them?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Okay. What about the pub? Do you know the oldest pub?
So it's a really good question. So in London, there is a toss-up, but I would put my money on the mitre, which is MITRE, which is the hat of a bishop. And that is just off Hatton Gardens. And it's just behind a wonderful church. And that was a medieval church. So this one was built for the workers of the who were building the church.
Wow.
You know, this is their green room, as it were.
Which area is that?
So Hatton Garden, it's just
canteen.
So it's just between, just on the cusp, on the edge of Holborn before you get into Farringdon. So if you go to Holborn High Street, for example, and then go east, it's just basically on that street. Holborn. It's called the Mitre.
M-A-T-I-E?
M-I-T-R-E.
Okay. So is that the one that we're talking about?
That's it. Now, it's not open at the weekends. It's available for private hire, and it is minute. It's basically the size of a little house. I mean, you can go up and up again, which is challenging after a couple of pints, and you're actually holding a few as well. But it is lovely. So it's one of those things. That's one of the downsides that I really didn't like. Having the pub culture after work when I had an office job. It's like, oh, let's go to the pub. Yeah, well, I'm usually in a technical environment, so it's mostly men who are quite happy standing in their suits or jeans and trainers, whereas I'm wearing a dress and usually heels, and there's nowhere to sit down. Look how few seats are actually available. So that's something to remember, that when it gets busy after work, for example, in the week, you will be standing whether you want it or not, even if there are chairs, because if you push the chair to the side, you can fit more people in. So you can stand outside. But if you go in the week, in the day, then, of course, that's a lot quieter.
Yeah, that's something that really struck me when I came here. People after work standing, putting their bags and jackets and blazers on the floor and then just talking outside the pub, you know, because I'm from Bulgaria, we sit down, and that's how things are happening, you know. Here
that's right, you got it right in Bulgaria. I've enjoyed my time when I've been, yeah. But I mean, it was a new type of, I think there's a difference between English culture and London culture, very, very different. We don't do that where I'm from.
Okay, so you say only in London this is happening, that people are standing outside the pub?
No, you see it in towns like, so if you go to Newcastle for drinks, or Birmingham's outside like clubbing, and they'll be the drinking on the streets and that sort of nasty culture. But in terms of standing outside pubs, you don't do it where you sort of have a normal town, because people have actually got to get home. Where in London, you can stay for a drink and then get the next train home, because everyone's coming to London to work. Does that kind of make sense? You don't really have that kind of culture. When I've worked, not in London, it's not the same kind of thing. Everyone drives to work, or, you know, so drinking isn't an option.
Okay, I see. Plus, another thing I would say is that everybody's always checking the clock for the last train. So it's like, okay, let's have a quick one and let's go.
The vomit comet. That's right. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, let's go back to Covent Garden. That was a nice detour that we did. So Covent Garden, you can literally spend all day there. You know, go around, visit shops, teas, cocktails, then in the evening go for a theater. You know, you can really spend you can really spend a whole day there. You can even have their operas in the area. So
that's right.
What else can we do? Oh, before I actually ask you this question, there is this over here, the sundial.
Seven dials.
Yeah, the seven dials. You know, I tried to find something interesting about it, couldn't find. I went there to see it. It wasn't something like wow. So is there something that you can wow me with about this place?
Yeah, of course. So in the centre, so if you would have seen it on Seven Dials, you would have seen that there's a column in the middle with blue dial faces, and that's where it comes from. But there are actually seven streets that are connecting this mini roundabout. Now, this was all formed in the 1690s, and it was the brainchild of a member of parliament called Thomas Neal. And he wanted to create a new, there we are. So he wanted to create a new area of London. And can you see how the buildings are these little triangular wedges?
Yeah.
Like Trivia Pursuit wedges, yeah?
Yeah.
So back then, when you rented accommodation or even a commercial property, you were charged based on the frontage of a building. So if you were in a normal shop on a street, you just had the little window at the front.
Yeah.
But if you were in one of these cheese slices, there's a lot more frontage that you would have to pay for because you're getting more access to people looking in and more light as well, of course. Natural light is really important since, of course, most people will be spending a lot of money on candles back in the 1690s mm-hmm. and all the way through to the late 1800s. So this was a way of getting more money. So you can see already there's actually two pubs on the left and in the middle. Because, of course, that makes more sense for them to be able to make more money than a shop nowadays. But it fell into disrepair. And then by the time of Charles Dickens, so we're talking the mid-1800s, this was a slum. And if you've seen ITV's Victoria, they have a cholera outbreak and they use the area of Seven Dials to. So I know I'm not selling it to you anymore. Oh, no. But this is where they set it because this is such a. Everybody that was living there now was in such poverty that there was nowhere to move. So if you got cholera, of course, it was from the water. Everybody else was drinking the same water as well. So it was a very, very poor area. And it's only recently. I mean, even when I moved to Covent Garden about 18 years ago, it still wasn't, this area of Seven Dials still wasn't there. It hadn't made it. But now there's some really cool food pop-ups. So if you don't want to sit down meal, but you want to be able to sit down and eat and maybe have a few different things, you know, nice hot donut with a bao bun and some stir fry or whatever you're wanting, then on Cucumber Alley, there is an amazing pop-up. You go down this alleyway and you think, oh, I'm not quite sure where I'm going. And then suddenly it opens up into this multi-level indoor complex. And you just have to follow your nose, really. It smells divine. So that's where I had like my first taste of a charcoal burger bun, you know, and that was 8 years ago. And you're only just starting to see them really on Brick Lane elsewhere. So there you go. So you can see the complex, how huge it is. And you can't believe that that is actually in Seven Dials where we've just been looking on the outside.
So that's just one of the corners. Is that what you said?
No, well, it's just down one of the little streets, okay. And then it sort of goes back into Seven Dials where the entrance is. So, yeah, so you have lots of different businesses selling their little things. So if you're on your own, like I often am when I'm in between tours and that, it's a bit difficult to because, you know, you've got to go from one to another and all the seats. But if there's two of you or more, then you can actually have a strategy and get all the yummy food at the same time so it's all warm and you can eat together.
This looks like a mini Covent Garden market in a way.
Yeah, they've got that sort of two-tier theme with the looking over, haven't they? So, but yeah, it's I mean, we've got some really cool pop-ups across London in Shoreditch and in Brixton and even in East London and Canary Canada Water. But we don't have very many of those kind of things, in central London because you need the space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks so much. That was insightful. Did you sell it? I feel a bit better now about 7,000 than before. That's true. Not over there. Not super hyped, but better. Okay, you did. Let's say you did a good job. Okay.
thank you.
How about? I mean, if we in a way scratch Covent Garden, would you say there is something in the area that it's worth checking out?
Yeah, so when I, on a Sunday in particular, when I had a desk job, as it were, I used to like going and exploring London. And of course, with living in Garden, I didn't want to pay for a travel ticket. So I used to walk and I had this, I still got it somewhere, a beaten up A to Z. And I used to literally mark the streets that I've been on, just so I could say, so if I sort of walk. Berkeley Street in London. And then, of course, iPhones came in and all the rest of it. So it kind of fell by the wayside. But one of the places I really loved to walk, especially on a Sunday morning, was down Fleet Street. So from Covent Garden, going to Aldwych, and then you have Fleet Street, which is a wonderful building. It connects the City of London to the City of Westminster. Mm-hmm. So here you go. And of course, they're the only two cities that we have in London. You think it's just one, but actually we have two. And this is a very ancient road that connected the two, where kings and queens would process from Westminster, and they would then basically ask permission of the Lord Mayor of London to enter the City of London. And so where we have Temple Bar, you might be able to pull that up. There is a dragon and a statue of Queen Victoria at the original spot. Not that one. There we go. Yeah. So this is the border of the City of Westminster, and where the Queen or the King would have to wait. And then the Lord Mayor of London would say, "Hey, up, Chuck. Yep, you're allowed in. Here's my sword." There's a ceremonial sword that the monarch could be given, as in, like, look, I'm unarmed now. I'm giving you the freedom of the city. So this is called Charles Birkin. He did this the dragon up there, and it's quite a fierce dragon if you move up, Pavel. And you might have known that the City of London, which we're now entering, is surrounded by dragons. Mm. And when the dragons were looking to be copied around London, they were going to use his. But it was deemed too fierce for us young ladies. And so the coal exchange dragons were chosen instead. But this is the ceremonial point. And then can you see the arch on the pictures that you're looking at on the left?
Yeah, is it the bar?
Yeah, that's it. So this is the Temple Bar before the dragon one. And this one was built by Sir Christopher Wren, or designed by Christopher Wren. And it's still made out of the same material of St. Paul's Cathedral. Mm. And that's where it is now. But it used to be where the dragon was. But can you imagine all the modern day traffic and buses trying to get under that big arch? Not a chance. And that was even having the problem in Victorian times, because they were having omnibuses, double decker buses, but not through motors. They were using horsepower. So it was on Fleet Street, and they needed to move it. But there's even a little room in there as well, which you can hire out now for, you know, if you have cocktails and canapes for up to 24 people, then you can go in there.
Well, that reminds me of Marble Arch, where
it's got that same feeling, hasn't it?
Yeah, a bit.
So, and when you walk down Fleet Street, you've got these fantastic old buildings, which are, old banks. And some of them are still banks. Some of them are private banks. And you have the old Bank of England, which is now a pub. Mm-hmm. So that's a really nice building too, because then you get to see the internal architecture. You know, these banks were, if you think of the feeling that you got maybe as a child, if you watched Mary Poppins, and it's... and it's all a little bit scary. It's all a little bit extra posh. You know, you don't feel like you belong.
Oh, okay.
But if you're going in here with money, you want to feel that your money is being looked after by people who know that they can spend their own money. So if they can spend their own money because they've got enough of it, that your money will be safe. Okay. So how beautiful is that?
There are other places, I think, that converted into pubs. I remember something around somewhere around Monument over there. They were building similar to that they're converted now, even to Old Bar One. I think it was Old Bar One.
Yeah, Cross Keys.
Somewhere there.
There's Cross Keys on Gracechurch Street. and that's a Wetherspoons one that's converted. And then also there's another pub very similar to this one up Chancery Lane. I think that's a Wetherspoons as well. And you just get this wonderful height more than anything else. I mean, just what a wonderful building to be in. And this is where you get to see the old England that the 1960s developers knocked down.
Yeah, this is fascinating. And big admirations, by the way, that that you are having this A to Z guides. I've seen this. I never had one, but I've seen it in the shops. And one of the reasons why I started doing videos and telling people stories about London is because I saw what you saw. You know, many people just come here and then work in their home, then work home, and then they go somewhere else. They go to Paris, they go to Spain. And what you did is like, no, I'm not going to stay home on the weekend. I'm just going to walk around. So big admirations. This is something that I noticed and I, you know, try to educate people, do that more. So really, happy.
Well, that's it. I mean, when I first came to London, I actually knew absolutely no one. I got headhunted. I came to London. I didn't know my flatmates, you know, everything was brand new. I didn't know London. I only came to theatre trips and that. And so because I worked in Mayfair and I lived in Bermondsey, in the summer I walked home, which took 2 hours. What? So you get to know the streets. Yeah.
Okay. That's pre-phones. Did you say that's pre-phones?
Well, I had a phone, but no fancy maps. Stuff.
Would you say...
No maps.
Would you say using a map will take you shorter now? Or is just the distance?
Well, the map's in the head now.
Okay. But do you think if you take that distance now, it's going to take you shorter because you know how where to go?
Well, I think it's more of I would choose a route that I enjoyed rather than the quickest route.
Okay.
So I call my internal navigation HasNav. So when HasNav is switched on, I can go to like the most optimal route in the speed. So I know all the side streets because obviously and then when I moved to Covent Garden and still working in Mayfair, you don't want to walk down the main streets. You want to do all the back ways so you can just whiz to the office. You don't want to have to wait for people to think that they're going to walk down a pavement or maybe not, you know. Especially in Covent Garden, you get to know how to maneuver around the crowds. And I live in Greenwich now, so I've got the same flipping problem here. It's a skill. Let's just say that.
Greenwich is my favorite area because, again, you can spend a whole day there. And yes, it's busy, but it's not as busy as central London. You know, you go to Covent Garden, you go up South Bank. It's not that busy. So I really, really, really enjoy that area.
I think it's the wide open spaces, isn't it?
Could be, yes. Could be that. But there's also so many things to do there. I mean, if you like museums, you go to museums, you can go with the boat.
Oh,
I mean,
goodness.
Oh, so many.
Yeah.
Oh, enough talking about Greenwich. You know, people know me.
That's
people,
another one.
Yeah, that's another one. Okay. Is there anything else you would like to share about Covent Garden or the surrounding area?
Well, we could do a little bit of Temple if you wanted. So we're going down Fleet Street because we've got a lovely old pubs. So as before we get to the Dragon, we go past a pub, a black and white building. It's mock Tudor called the George Pub on Fleet Street. And it's beautiful mock. And I say mock Tudor because it's not from the 14 or the 1500s, but it is from 1723. So I think it's old enough. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
It was formed in 1723 as a coffee house. And this is something that people really haven't made the connection. And one of the things that we do very well in London, particularly the city of London, is financial services.
Yeah.
You know, we're world leaders. But when you think about stocks and bonds and shares and all of that kind of stuff, it's got to have started from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it didn't come from the government. It came from businessmen and entrepreneurs connecting together in coffee houses. And this is one of those coffee houses. So And there were lots of coffee houses around the City of London, and each of them had sort of like a bit different theme. So if you think of like Facebook groups, and there's different groups have got themes that you might be interested in, YouTube videos or podcasts, or maybe you're into AI, you don't want to go into a group, Facebook group that you're not interested in. And it's the same with the coffee houses. They each had their own theme. So if you were interested in trade from Jamaica or from India, then you went to different coffee houses. And this is where all the news, because of course we didn't have BBC News or live Twitter feeds, you would have boys bringing messages, the latest news, on a piece of paper, and that would get read out in the coffee house, the latest piece of news. So, and all the trading. So if you wanted to buy, if there was a ship that had come in and they were selling their sugar, for example, mm-hmm. the trading would happen in these coffee houses.
Oh, so they will trade in the coffee houses before the ship arrives. And then when the ship arrives, then everything is already...
No, so when the ships arrived and they say, right, we've got 60 packs of sugar. Who wants to place a bid? What they'd do is they'd light a candle. They'd put a pin in the wick of that candle, and if no one bidded, then the candle at a certain time got down to the wick, it would melt and the pin would drop to the floor. And that's where we get the term, you can hear a pin drop. So you can imagine it. You've got all of these chrysanthemums, for example, and we don't really do chrysanthemum juice over here. So no one wants to bid, and everyone's just sitting in the room going, dum 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 dum, waiting for this candle to go down until the pin drops, and you're like, okay, no sale, let's do the next one. So this is like an 18th century eBay, I suppose.
Wow. I didn't know that. That is so interesting. So that will be happening in the coffee houses or the pubs, yeah. or both?
Well, coffee houses, because if you were in a pub, you were drinking alcohol. And that's not very good for your judgment.
For business.
Whereas if you're in a coffee house, then the caffeine is actually used to, you know, perk you up, keep you alert. So they were the areas for business, coffee houses.
Wow, here you go. What a curiosity. I love that. Okay.
There you go, you see?
That was fantastic. Yeah. Okay. If you have anything else to add on the subject.
Yeah.
Oh, ask that?
Of course.
We can talk a long time.
Well, if you get onto Street View, Prevail, where you are now, and on the other side of the George, I think a lot of people would recognize this building if you got it up. So Fleet Street is named after the River Fleet, are you getting that picture up? Are you find it?
Are you? What I'm so looking for? What I'm looking for?
Can you go on to a Street View of the George?
Oh yeah, yeah.
On Fleet Street. Because then you can do a dramatic swivel round, and maybe I can test you and see if you recognise it. But then, of course, you're getting to see the page. Anyway. So that's it. Lovely. So in you go.
Okay, so hold on. I'm looking for the photos.
It's a street view. There we go. This is the building. And the lovely lamppost around here as well. Yeah, so swing to the left. Do you recognise this building, Pavel?
Sounds
so.
Sort
walk
of,
straight.
Hold on, is that some sort of old church, wasn't it?
Look, so if you turn right now, stop where you are. There we go. There we are.
Yeah, I've passed this one, but
yeah.
No.
So it's the Royal Courts of Justice, and you often see people around because obviously court is still a working building. You get to, it's rather exciting actually because you get to see the barristers in their horsehair wigs going through, you know, and you get all the journalists, especially if it's a big case. But maybe if you've seen Bridget Jones's Diary, this is where Bridget Jones has to come to do her work, and then she misses an interview and she goes, oh God, I'm going to be sacked. And then Mr. Darcy, Colin Firth, saves the day and saves a job. And this is where it all happens. And across the road is the George, but also a little news agent's where she goes in to buy her ciggies. There you go, the little newsagent's in the blue next to the George. That's it.
Okay,
that's right. And then the church on the right, if you swivel around to the right, keep going, right, there we go, that church there. Left again.
Oh,
left.
Sorry.
It was all right. It's in the, there you go, in the island. Yeah, there's okay. a church right in the middle of this island. And that was also used in Bridget Jones number 2 when, was it number 3? When Daniel Cleaver has his memorial service because, you know, everyone thinks he's dead. And they have it there. So this has been used in lots of films, this area. So it's a good one on a Sunday in particular because it's so quiet. So many times I have walked down here and they've been filming something, which is quite exciting, really.
I've been used for many movies, especially Bridget Jones. In this one it's Twinnings, uh-huh. which is the something with the oldest tea is the oldest tea house.
That's right, and look how teeny weeny it is. Especially, I mean, look at the size of the door. Compared to the door on the left, which is the size of a bank, you know, that used to be a bank. So, you know, the bank is supposed to be really big and impressive, whereas the little tea, obviously tea was very expensive. It was one of the most expensive things that you could have, tea and also sugar for making marzipan, for example. And it is absolutely exquisite in there, and they do it beautifully out for Christmas as well. But it is just the shop. You can see just nestled in between those two buildings. It's people can't really believe it's there when they see it. So that's certainly another one to stop. And we're talking about 1700s. And you can even see above the door with Twinings that it's been support. It's got royal patronage as well. So you're in good company there.
Yeah. Is there something you can tell us about this place? I know
the Twinings.
Yes. I know there are tea demonstrations happening over there.
Yep, they do tea demonstrations there. It's quite a small space, so I get quite claustrophobic in there because, you know, people are umming and ahhing, whereas I like to go in and sort of get what I like and go out. Whereas Mariage Frere, you've got a bit of space and it's a lot quieter. People just never really recognise that it's there. But if you like, do you like your films, Pavel? We haven't talked about films before.
Films? Like
films, movies.
Yeah, I like, but not a fan of Bridget Jones.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'm sure.
What about the Da Vinci Code?
What's that?
What about the Da Vinci Code?
The Da Vinci. Yeah, it's all right. The movies I enjoyed the most are the ones that are based on true stories. These are the ones I enjoyed the most. So, for example, you mentioned Colin Firth. Probably have seen King's Speech. That's one of the best movies I've seen. He's acting so well. I think he got Oscar for that role.
Yeah, he must have got a few lessons for that one, mustn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you carry on down Fleet Street, you get to Temple Church. And this is one of the legal courts that we have, where barristers have their, what they're called courts, but they're basically their offices. And in there we have Temple Church. And this is used a lot in filming. So not just in the film, the church itself, they used it. There we go, for the Da Vinci Code. When they get a clue wrong and they go here, isn't that gorgeous? So that's built in the plans of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. But the rest of the complex, if you want to get some photos up of the area around, you can walk through here and you can see this little alleyway. So you don't feel that you kind of belong because it's all oldie-worldy. But they do a lot of filming here, including Downton Abbey, Mr. Selfridge. They also did another TV show. Oh, I can't remember what it was called now. Penny Dreadful. Quite a few here as well. Stars use it a lot. So the Madams, if you've seen that one of 18th century brothels, they use one of the buildings as actually a courthouse, but it's just an office in real life. So it's a really interesting area for you to walk around where you get the barristers and administrators and clerks. And it's a very old feeling of London because, of course, this all survived the Great Fire of London without having the crowds of people. It's a working environment, so it's very calm, it's very quiet, and you just get to see lots and lots of fantastic old buildings and cobblestones and that.
Yeah, especially the weekends is very quiet if you go there.
Yes. So if you want to access it on a Sunday, then you'll need to access it via Water Street, because all the other side doors, which are obviously open for the workers, won't be open.
But you can. Okay, so it's free of charge to go inside, isn't it?
Free of charge to go in, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a spooky, because if you go, for example, in Westminster Abbey, there are a lot of graves on the floor. You're actually walking on the graves, but they're not, you know, you see just names written, while here you see just, you know, it's like people popping up, you know, it's a bit of a difference.
Yeah, well, there's no one buried here, so you're fine.
Oh, okay. So what is all these statues on the floor?
The cadavers, they're just statues. It's not where the knights are buried.
Okay. And why is that? Would you happen to know?
Well, if you watched Angels and Demons, the Da Vinci Code, you'd find out.
Okay, so you're sending me to watch the Da Vinci Code.
I'll give you some homework.
I see.
But yeah, I mean, have a look at the pictures. There they are. So these are the cadavers, and it just tells you like the sort of different ages of the knights. You can tell by the way that they're dressed. You know, this is the last thing that they're going to be remembered for, you know, it's setting it in stone. So they want a very specific image. So you will often see them obviously wearing their the Knights Templar uniform and their armor, but maybe have a dog at the end, at the feet, because dog is loyalty. So you're loyal to the cause, you're loyal to the king, that kind of thing. But yes, I mean, it's a really special area, lots of alleyways and arches, and it's very atmospheric in the church and in the area called Temple itself. Some really lovely old buildings, and you'll probably go, oh, this feels familiar, and you're like, yeah, you've probably seen a film or several films that they've actually used Temple in.
Well, I definitely learned a lot about you. So you like films, you like to walk a lot, you like history that I already knew. But
and I like food.
You like food, you like pubs as well. Okay, I definitely learned a lot about you. that was a good hour. I just saw that we've been talking more than an hour. I don't know when time flies. Yeah. So maybe if you want to say something final, and then we can close it for this episode with the idea that I would like to have you for another episode and talk about a different area, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure. Yeah, so I would say explore on foot, take your time, maybe get a little bit of a printout of a map rather than Google telling you where to go, or maybe City Mapper. Really useful app, don't get me wrong. But if you want to explore London, then you need to get off the beaten path. You want to go down the road that no one else is walking down. And that's where you get to see the hidden treasures. And there's so many lovely little plaques. And there is an app which you can get called londonremembers.com. And I give this my mom. She sits on the bus with the app. And as she goes past, there are little points on the map, and it'll tell her what that fountain was or that building with a plaque, you know. So it's a really useful free app for you to just get a little taster of the history of London without having to, you know, fully invest in anything, time or money.
Oh, I'm thinking I'm going to get that app myself. To be fair, when I travel, I really like, I told you that I don't like taking magnets. I don't want magnets, but what I take is paper maps. that's my souvenir in a way. I prefer to have it, you know, look like a tourist, you know, open up the map, you know, look
I like the laminated ones, you know, because you can feel that the corners have all been bent, you know, and worn off over the years. And you know, that's a good map. No. And the battery will never wear out, will it?
No. But I take the map ones and then I just draw over them. I'm like, okay, I go one day one, and then I just draw my path, and then I just keep it, and that's my souvenir. That's my souvenir.
That's right. Right. It's the best way to do it. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fantastic. Well, Hazel, thanks so much for sharing all that information. Thanks so much for the existence of the sharing the existence of Haznav. Was it Haznav? No.
Haznav.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us, for sharing all this. And we're going to leave all your information in the description. So if anybody's coming to London and want to learn more, then just contact you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice day. And that's a wrap for yet another episode of the Curious Pavel podcast sessions. Before we finish completely, let me just tell you two things. First of all, thank you so much for listening to the whole episode. You are warming my heart. And the second one is, since you listened this episode to the very end, that means you enjoy it. Well, don't be selfish and share this episode with other people. Before you close your app, really go and share this now. Open your phone, go to the episode, share it to your favorite platform. Don't be selfish, share it to other people. Let them learn something new about this country, about this city, about this place as well. Don't be selfish, share. Thank you so much. If you're into visuals and it was by accident that you ended up on this podcast listening, if you prefer visuals, these episodes are also going on the YouTube channel, Curious Pavel. Thanks so much for listening again for the whole episode. Thank you so much for sharing. I wish you a fantastic day and I'll see you on the next episode.